Welcome to the latest episode of Apple at Work. This is a podcast all about Apple and the enterprise and related technologies. Thanks for coming back with us this week. As always, I'm Bradley Chambers, your host. And as always, I have a special guest with us to talk about something new with technology. It is Perry Correll from Extreme Networks, who is the Director of Product Marketing. Perry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bradley, thank you very, very much for inviting me on. I'm really looking forward to it. There's a lot of good stuff happening in the industry right now, and I'm always thrilled to talk about it, get a little techie, but also there's a lot of business value associated with this.
Yeah, so Perry and I had this strange relationship where we actually live in the same city now, which was kind of weird to me. We were emailing, I guess, late last fall about some things, and you mentioned, you'd said, hey, where are you based out of? And I said, Chattanooga, and he was like, I just moved here. So it was fun. We got to meet up around Christmas and have coffee downtown, which obviously we can't meet up anymore because we're all stuck at home in a quarantine. But nevertheless, we're thankful for technology. And I was talking to somebody, if this pandemic had happened 10, 12 years ago, so many businesses are just absolutely shut down. But because of the technology we have today, with Wi-Fi specifically, a lot of businesses are still able to kind of operate. And that's, I think we're all very thankful for that.
That's a huge point, because that's, we were discussing that the other day too. It's like what you just said, but imagine what we were going through right today if Wi-Fi didn't exist, or it didn't exist at the level we have as far as teleworking, telelearning, telemedicine, all this stuff. Once again, not picking on the cellular industry, but that industry just couldn't handle the load that we're seeing right now. So it is, and it kind of flows right into kind of what we're talking today about, more bandwidth is required in the Wi-Fi spectrum.
Well, 100%. And so the reason, this kind of problem exists is honestly, it's a doing of Apple, because prior to the iPhone and the iPad coming out, we just didn't see the level of demand in the enterprise that we're seeing now with Wi-Fi. I mean, I remember when I was working, for a telco actually in the mid 2000s, and they had Wi-Fi, but it was mainly in conference rooms. Obviously, it was 802.11g, and it wasn't, they weren't even concerned with capacity or coverage. It was like, we'll have it here. But, and obviously we all know the history of what's happened. The iPhone hits, the iPad hits, and all of a sudden you're sitting here not looking at just covering conference rooms, but like three devices per employee. And so it's, so not only do you have a coverage problem that you have to address, but you now have a massive capacity problem. And, that's kind of what we're at in 2020, with just a flat out need for more bandwidth still. So we've had some new developments from the FCC. And so that's why I wanted to bring Perry on. Perry, what has the FCC proposed here just recently?
Okay, the FCC just, I think the 1st of April is actually what it was, they proposed opening up the 6 gigahertz band for unlicensed operation, which is essentially Wi-Fi. This has actually been going on for about 3 or 4 years when it was first introduced, because to your point, the explosion, the need for more bandwidth has, it's just exploded. There's no other way to say that. And if you kind of look at it, the last time we had a big chunk of bandwidth in the 5 gigahertz space that was made available for Wi-Fi, that was over 15 years ago. And to your point, it was before the smartphone explosion. So in many ways, you could actually say Apple caused this problem. We've eaten up all that bandwidth because of the number of the devices out there. So what we by individual vendors, the Wi-Fi Alliance, the Wireless Broadband, a lot of different organizations have really been petitioning and advocating to the FCC to open up more bandwidth. Now, mind you, on the other side of the house, there's some carriers that actually would like to keep that licensed. So it is a little bit of battle. Not everybody agrees the same thing. But they came out and said, hey, we're looking at this. We're looking at open up about, 1.2 gigahertz worth of bandwidth. They're actually going to vote on it. I believe it's the 23rd of April when they're actually going to vote. Most people in the industry, watchers and whatever, just see very, very positive view on that. So they're going to open up that bandwidth. But there's actually going to be some limitations as far as power and use case. But one of the important things to understand is that a lot of people you'll hear that say, if they open up the 6 gigahertz band, it doubles the amount of available Wi-Fi spectrum in the unlicensed band. That's not actually true. to be, it's more important to understand how much usable bandwidth. So if you look at the 5 gigahertz band right now, there's a lot of that stuff that has DFS and whatever, and a lot of people don't use that. So if you actually look at what the usable bandwidth is going to open up, it's almost more like 4 or 5 times the amount of usable bandwidth. So it's enormous. And, you know, the best way I try to explain how what this is going to do is if you kind of look at Wi-Fi today compared to like a major metropolitan city's highway. You're on that highway, it's 65 miles an hour, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, and you're doing 12 miles an hour. And there's 5 lanes of traffic, and you're all the way in the left, and you're still doing 12 miles an hour, just because there's slower devices, there's congestion, there's all that. But if you look off to your left and you see that they're building this brand new highway, and it's got like 8 lanes, and nobody's on it yet, that's what 6 gigahertz promises, because lots more spectrum, and also you're going to only allow high performance Wi-Fi devices on that network. So Wi-Fi, the 6 gigahertz Wi-Fi, which is known as Wi-Fi 6E, will only support Wi-Fi 6 clients. So when I'm operating the 6 gigahertz band, I don't have any of those G clients you were just talking about. I don't even have 11AC clients. So not only do I have more spectrum, I've got cleaner spectrum, and I've got faster devices. So it's kind of like a win-win-win.
Well, it would be like if they built new highways and said only people who are driving electric vehicles can come on those.
And electric so, F1 vehicles.
Yeah, and so like you're thinking, okay, not only do I get this new technology, then I've got my own highway. And so that's a great way to put it. And you and I were talking before the show, and what people don't realize, or they may, about Wi-Fi is the problems we have today are often being addressed 5 to 6 years later. And so when, you know, 11AX, which is, you know, the public name is Wi-Fi 6, when that technology was being developed is when we kind of knew the problems we face today. And so that if you kind of work backwards, 11AC, which is Wi-Fi 5, which still a lot of devices come with, that was being developed before we had an idea of what the smartphone and tablet revolution would bring. So that's why it's, you know, you kind of have this chicken and the egg problem. You have a problem, the industry goes to solve it, but it does take some serious time for this thing to come to fruition, because not only does the standard have to be ratified, vendors have to build it, and then devices have to build it in. And so it's kind of, you know, we're always just kind of in this cat and mouse game with these standards. It's really kind of, what's the best way to say it? It's, you know, you just have to have a long view of it.
Exactly. And one of the other things to look at, if you look at, you know, if kind of a nerd and been in Wi-Fi for a long time, and you look at the progression from, you know, G and A and 11N and AC and all that stuff, all these changes and all these improvements, even though you're going faster and faster and faster, in many ways, you're only tweaking around the edge. I'm making this device go faster. I'm making this device talk. What we're doing now, and, you know, sometimes people get a little bit jaded because, like, okay, yeah, it's the newest Wi-Fi. They don't realize that it's totally different. I'm totally opening up a brand new spectrum, and I limit who can get on. It's an enormous value, and it's not just, hey, it's just the next iteration of Wi-Fi. It totally opens it up, and it gives me a lot more space. And as you said, the devices, when all this is going to happen, you know, take a step back on it. It's not happening tomorrow. It's not happening. You're probably not going to see anything really a lot happen before the end of the year. It's probably going to be next year before you actually can start taking advantage of it. Because to your point, the FCC still hasn't blessed it. Internationally, there's all different rules, so there's not going to be as much spectrum in different parts of the world. So you've got Europe, you've got Asia, you've got South America, others. So their spectrum and their availability is going to be different. You have the vendors that make the APs, and they're going to be the first ones out the door, because that's what we wait for the next generation of AP, a brand new technology. However, you kind of hinted before, as far as the client side, you know, the next iPhone or the next tablet or the next laptop or whatever to have 6 gigahertz type or 6E type technology, that's down the road, because as a vendor, we're focused on the brand new technology, and that's what I'm going to put in the access point. For like an iPhone, and once again, I'm not speaking for them, but my view is it, they're not looking at, hey, great new Wi-Fi came out, let's make a new phone. They're looking at cameras and pixels and tactile value and you know, Wi-Fi is just one piece of that, where the Wi-Fi technology is a primary thing in an access point. So they're going to fit the where their next generation of product, where 6E will fit in. So that's going to be a little bit different. So it's not like, you know, go out and, you know, look for Christmas time, maybe having a new 6E Wi-Fi phone. Probably isn't going to happen.
Do you think, you know, kind of thinking about the next generation of IoT and wearables, does the 6 gigahertz band really fit in well with, you know, sensors in the enterprise and more wearables, or is it really going to be more towards, you know, the smartphone and the tablets?
It's going to be for everything, because one of the nice things about our technology going forward is it doesn't always get more expensive. Sometimes it actually gets less expensive. And so being able to put this technology into IoT devices and have a tremendous amount of more spectrum, you know, once again, I kind of given the numbers about where 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 times more capacity were coming out. You know, typically right now today, we've got about 24 available Wi-Fi channels. We're getting about 60 brand new channels. So one of the problems with the density we deal with today is interference, where channels and frequencies interfere with each other. That's going to open that up dramatically. And also, I can take dedicated channels and assign them to certain classes of IoT devices, or I can take dedicated channels and assign it for, you know, voiceover services, nurse call services, or stuff like that. It gives a much, I keep coming back to this, the more channels gives me cleaner spectrum, which gives me higher data rates and better performance and a better user experience, which is really what we're focusing on today.
This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by iAmazing Configurator. iAmazing is a popular iOS device manager, which gives you unparalleled control over iOS and iPadOS data. The iAmazing team has been focused on developing solutions designed to help with mobile device management. This spring, they launched iAmazing Configurator, a set of tools which simplifies local supervision, configuration, and provisioning of iOS devices. With iAmazing Configurator, you design blueprints in a clean and readable editor before applying them in bulk to your iPhones and iPads. You can backup, erase, and update 20 iPhones simultaneously, or configure 20 iPads to launch an app in single app mode. These are just a few of the examples of the workflows which are easily achievable in iAmazing Configurator. Because iAmazing runs locally, it can perform backups and backup restores, push custom apps, contacts, media and files, run battery diagnostics, and more. iAmazing Configurator is fully MDM aware and fully compatible with devices which are already enrolled and supervised with Apple's device enrollment program. Request your free trial today at iAmazing.com/configurator. Again, that is iAmazing.com/configurator, and we'll have a link to them in the show notes. Again, thanks to iAmazing Configurator for sponsoring this episode of Apple at Work.
Well, and you know, one of the of extremes, kind of, I would even say niches, one of the things you all are most known for is your work with the NFL. And that's a perfect type of environment where adding more channels makes that problem a lot easier to solve. Because, you know, if you're just putting up a single access point in the home, you're generally not going to have the interference issues or capacity issues that you will in the enterprise, or certainly in these, you know, massive stadiums. And again, unless you're in an apartment building with, you know, you can see a bunch of different access points, but like when I open up my, you know, Wi-Fi icon here on my Mac, I see 5 of my neighbors. So I'm not running into interference issues against their access points because I do have enough available channels. But you think about a massive NFL stadium that holds 100,000 people. And if they have an average of, say, like 1.2 devices per person, like it's a massive problem to have to solve and a massive engineering challenge to try to tune these radios and manage the power levels just right so you get the capacity without the interference issue. And that's because it's not just as simple as, hey, add more access points. If that was easy, that's a money problem. But it's not that simple because you have to deal with the radio interference, you know, in the air. And so when you start going from, say, 24 channels to 60, well, that problem just got a lot easier to solve.
Absolutely. I love what you're talking about, your home, what you see. You see 5 other neighbors' access points. And be aware, you got walls between you and them. Now you take that apartment or that complex and whatever and take all the walls away, you'll see 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 ones. I mean, I've got a stadium with 70,000 seats in it or 100,000 seats, whatever it happened to be. I'm on one side of the stadium. Somebody else is on the other side of the stadium. Normal AP power settings, we can see each other. You know, so you had your point. I can't just throw APs at it. I really have to focus the beam of that. I really need to knock down the signal strength. I actually need to use the bodies in the stadium to attenuate that signal. And if I've only got 24, 5 gigahertz channels to start with, and I'm in a DFS environment, so maybe now I've only got 12 or 16, I have to reuse those over and over and over again. And there's just no way you're not going to step on each other for a certain amount of time, which raises your, you know, getting a little nerdy here, raises your or reduces your SNR, your signal noise ratio. So even though I have good connection, I got low throughput. So you really need to knock that down. So by having those more channels, obviously it's going to be very, very valuable. But to the point, we're a couple of years down the road before you start seeing enough clients in those stadiums before you're actually going to take take availability of the bandwidth there. But once again, we've got to always be looking forward, and it's a huge tool we just got. So,
well, and then one benefit there too is, let's say 5 years from now, we have in a stadium type environment, we have half of our clients that are 6 gigahertz capable. Well, and half of them aren't. Well, the half that aren't, because half of them have moved on to this new highway, the older highways, are they not getting more efficient as well because there's just less clients on them?
Absolutely. That's the whole idea of, you know, carpool lanes and stuff. If I put more people in carpool lanes, the non-carpool lanes get better advantages also. So it actually works. So you'll have environments where you'll see tri-radio access points where they have a 2.4 or 5 and a 6 gigahertz radios in them. So start balancing out these people even more. What's also very, very useful is in Wi-Fi, I can have a 20 megahertz channel, a 40 megahertz channel, an 80 and 160 megahertz wide channels. The 80 and the 160, they don't do a lot in the density environment. Typically, you focus on the 20s or the 40s. But those 80s and 160s, they eat up a lot of bandwidth today. Now, if I got 60 more channels in a stadium, I can build and focus on the 20 megahertz channels. And then like the connections between the Jumbotron and digital signage and stuff, I can give them, you know, 80 megahertz or 160 megahertz wide channels without actually taking capacity and bandwidth away from my client connectivity. So that's one of the things about having so many more channels is that I can do a lot of different things and I'm not stealing from Peter to take care of Paul.
Well, and, you know, our needs are growing ever more exponentially as well, or I wouldn't say needs, our wants. So I think about how, you know, when I went to a football game at the University of Georgia, you know, 2011, I was taking maybe a single photo, not doing anything with it. And you look at what people are doing now in stadiums, they're, you know, possibly streaming, trying to, you know, listen to the game on the radio using the internet. They're trying to share, you know, 4K videos on social media. They're trying to group text 20 megabit photos. And so what users are wanting or demanding of the networks has not only gone up exponentially, but then the devices we carry. So it's like this influx of problems that like our current technology was just simply not built to handle.
Exactly. And what it used to be before is most people were pulling down information. Now, to your point, because of social media, I'm pushing up more than I'm pulling down because, as you just said, I'm using streaming videos and stuff. We've got a stadium I know actually in I believe it's Australia, whatever. And what they do is they allow you to kind of FaceTime to the Jumbotron for a certain amount of money or whatever it is. So this is actually what that enables. You know, internationally, they have people that, you know, you can actually gamble online at the stadiums and stuff like that. Obviously, they don't do that in the U.S. But, you know, different needs and what people are doing. How to, you know, I'm gonna order my four hot dogs and my three Cokes before the halftime. And that way, and I'm going to pay for it on order it online, pay for it online and just go pick it up. So I don't have to stand in those lines. You've got people that are using apps to tell me which bathroom is the busiest right now in a stadium. And you don't necessarily think about all the use cases they have. If I have enough capacity and I have the right app, I can push a lot of information out to my guests.
Well, and the gambling is an interesting one because during this downturn in our economy, The stock I have been kind of investing in, not kind of like I am investing in, because I'm a big believer in you make money right now if you have it, because you can get stuff really cheap, get stocks really cheap. Is this, so I've been putting money in a company called Penn National Gambling, because they own 34% of a company called Barstool Sports, which they're kind of like an ESPN for young people. It's really big online. Big podcasting market. Well, Penn is probably going to be the majority owner of Barstool in a couple of years. Well, Barstool has the brand for online gambling. And I really believe all of the regulations around online gambling in the U.S. are going to be repealed in the next couple of years, and it'll be just wide open. And so I really think you'll be in a situation where if you're at a football game, you can throw $5 on the coin flip and be right there. Or you can literally bet on this drive. Say, okay, I'm going to bet $5 that this team gets to at least to, you know, midway or scores a touchdown, but $10 they score a touchdown. And so I think those kind of micro gambling is going to be big. And so that's why, like, I'm investing in Penn National Gambling. It's the stock PENN, because I think that's going to be so big. And to your point, you can't do that in a stadium if you don't have bandwidth, because if you're trying to get that bet off, well, the time you get it off, the play has probably already happened.
No, that exactly. And that's actually one of the advantage here as far as latency. And you typically think about that when I'm doing, you know, big cellular backhaul and stuff. And because I have a cleaner spectrum, a lot less latency. What we're also heavily involved with, obviously you mentioned the NFL. We're also heavily involved with esports, which is exploding. And because of what's going on right now, and nobody's playing on the fields, they're playing inside. This is exploding both at the primary secondary level and at the higher ed level. And once again, bandwidth isn't such a big deal in esports and gaming like that, but latency is. It's tremendously important that, as you said, you react very, very quickly. And so we're seeing tremendous drives on that. Another area, augmented reality and virtual reality. A lot of people don't realize right now, a lot of those systems actually used tethered cables because of the bandwidth and the latency issue. You've actually got companies that their whole business is how to set up above the ceiling or on the ceiling tethered cables so people can use the VR and the AR goggles without wrapping cables around themselves. What 6E is going to do is open up, once again, a tremendous amount of bandwidth and capacity and simplify everybody's lives. We're getting to that point. And obviously in the home, it's just going to be so simple.
Well, I'm really, really excited about this. I've been a big Wi-Fi person since, I guess, 2011, because you realize that's the end link for most of our devices now. And if you have bad Wi-Fi, then everything else falls apart. And so much of the challenges today are not like this vendor can't do fast speeds. It's like we just have like complex RF issues that we've needed help solving from a FCC perspective, and then just a development of these new standards. But again, the downside is as our needs have grown, our devices have gotten smaller, if you think about wearables, and then therefore you've got battery concerns as well. So we solve one problem, then we have another one. And that's just the role of technology as we keep innovating. And so I'm really, really excited about 6 GHz. I think because if you don't have Wi-Fi 5 or 11ac in the enterprise in the home, then so much of what we do at work doesn't happen. And so I'm thankful that people started solving that problem 5-6 years ago. And so we're always trying to solve the problems for the next 5 and the next 10 years, because so many of the innovations won't happen unless the infrastructure is really there.
No, absolutely. And to kind of give a little shout out to where both of us live, a lot of people don't realize that Chattanooga's probably got one of the best wired broadband access. Most of us have, fiber. They put fiber in a long, long time ago, and they got gigabit to the house. So you can actually get gig uplinks. And if you have a gig uplink, a fiber gig uplink coming to your front door, and your Wi-Fi from the front door to your device stinks, you just lost the whole thing, because it's the weakest link that's going to determine the quality of your network. And so once again, if you got high quality fiber into the house, I definitely want to have a high quality wireless or fiberless or whatever you want to call it, all the way to my laptop, my phone, my tablet, my IoT device, my thermostat. Pick a device. It's got Wi-Fi in it now.
100%. And that's something as the school I work at has been doing distance learning. I've realized like this doesn't happen. It happens. It's much harder without the infrastructure that I have, because I have gigabit internet to my house. I have wired Ethernet every room in my house. I have multiple access points in my house. I have, I've got a phone that is Wi-Fi 6 capable. I've got a laptop that's obviously not Wi-Fi 6 capable yet, but I've got Wi-Fi 6 in my home. And, if you're in an area that is still on DSL or a lower speed cable, how does that even work? I mean, you just run into issues where you're slowed down and hindered by your uplink. And so that's why I've been just a big believer in the internet to the home is a utility, not a luxury anymore. And I think we're all certainly seeing that in 2020. Our city, Chattanooga specifically, I'm rocking and rolling here at my house. I've got, my kids are all doing distance learning, and we're doing a lot during the day, and I'm having no issues. And Perry, we'll do a little trivia. Can you guess how many devices are on my network right now?
You're not a normal person, so
I'm not.
I'm going to figure what the normal person would have, and I'm going to double it. So I'm going to say you probably got 30 devices on your network.
Let's pull it up. Now, I should let you know, I am a smart home junkie. I write a column called HomeKit Weekly, where I look at all, I'm a big HomeKit guy, Apple's HomeKit, so I've got everything on the internet. And as of right now, I have 51 devices on my internet.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I've got, that's two thermostats, my security system is on the Wi-Fi, I've got HomeKit cameras around my house, and a lot of those are very low power devices that are controlling lights, but yeah, 51 total devices, and I remember thinking, 5 devices was a lot in a home.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me, and you kind of touched on a little before, or you actually made me think about it. Historically, K-12, primary secondary schools have always had, they were always been lacking for high performance Wi-Fi. And I'm wondering if anybody's going to do a study that finds that teachers, when they found out they're working from home, they actually got better Wi-Fi services in some areas just because of home systems and, the broadband services versus what's happened in their school. It'd be interesting to see that. And if that would, obviously drive more improvements in schools and E-rate money and all that stuff going down the future. It'd just be kind of fun to see what people realized out of that.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. And even if the uplink is as good and the Wi-Fi is as good, but a lot of IT departments just put on these arcane policies to slow everything down. I actually had a teacher email me and kind of mentioned that it was so nice to be able to stream music while they were working without technically being against their IT terms of service. Because it is I'm sure there are still schools out there that say no streaming music in a school. It's if you don't have the bandwidth to run Spotify during your school, you've built it wrong.
That's funny that I hadn't even thought about that by the teachers moving home, depending on how they're connected to their teaching, if I've just extended the school enterprise all the way out versus VPNs or something like that, then I'm still going to hit that policy. But if I'm just connected in through Zoom or something else, then I'm going to be able to, for lack of a better word, do what I want or teach any way I want, which is kind of an interesting thing too, kind of a little totally different topic, but obviously there's a lot of discussion these days about the value of the cloud. I'd love to see the numbers associated with Zoom, for an example, from January to April, and how that cloud service was able to grow logarithmically. And the only way you could have done that with the cloud, you couldn't have done that with on-prem server type stuff. And I'd love to see what those numbers look like.
There's some sort of VPN. You kind of got to look at the role of on-prem devices versus cloud devices as well. And I think one of the things I think we'll see coming out of this is the focus on end user experience, because that's going to, I think, end up trumping all. Is from an IT perspective, it's about making it easy for the user and about picking the best service. This is going to be fascinating to see what changes in our schools and what changes in the enterprise coming out of this quarantine.
You know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned the end user experience, because that's something that I harp on a lot, because a lot of people will say, am I You know, we went from N to AC, and if I had a good N network and I went to a good AC network, the N user probably isn't going to see much of a difference. You know, if I had a good AC and went to a good AX and whatever, I'm probably still not going to see a lot of difference unless you're actually using the off DMA and all that type stuff. But by going to just getting more spectrum, I keep coming back to this analogy, is I'm getting off that 405 freeway that's going around LA and I'm getting onto a freeway with only fast electric cars, I'm going to have a better user experience. And people are actually going to see it when Wi-Fi, when it actually, you know, we're talking a couple years down the road, but so it's, God, it's so faster. And, you know, I'm not dropping any calls. I'm not using any sessions. It will actually, once again, we're quadrupling the available usable capacity, and that's going to be noticeable.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I think we've got from the Wi-Fi industry and with the FCC support, we've got a great vision for what we need in the next 10, 15 years. And we've got devices that are incredible and they're getting faster and more powerful all the time, better batteries. So honestly, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, let me add a couple of techie things before we leave as far as the Wi-Fi 6. So there's a couple, or 6E. There's something to understand. What the FCC is doing, they're opening up the whole spectrum, 1.2 gigahertz in the United States, for what's called low power indoor devices. So it's APs that can only be indoors, they can't go outdoors, and they have low power settings, which is kind of okay because now it's going to match the power settings of the clients. So you actually do want those to be synchronized. It doesn't make any sense for an AP to be able to reach a client, but a client not to be able to reach back. Then outdoors, they're also going to have some AFC requirements. Now, a lot of people call that automatically frequency control. It isn't. It's automatic frequency coordination. What it does is I have incumbents that operate in the 6 gigahertz band, carriers, utility service, and whatever. And before I can bring my local service up on a certain channel or whatever, I consult real time that database and make sure there's nobody else, and use GPS information and all that, you make sure there's nobody else near me that I will interfere with their licensed spectrum or what they've already reserved or what they're already using. So once again, there's tools available to do this, and it's kind of the same thing we used for, that uses for CBRS, or even if you remember the white space days. So that kind of some tucky stuff, but the low power indoor stuff, which is really what everybody wanted, because, you know, that's where the Wi-Fi lives and breathes. That's going to be open for the whole 1.2 gigahertz.
Well, that's, I feel like we are just in this awesome spot with Wi-Fi with the government. I feel like the government and the FCC are really, you know, this can help drive innovation forward. So I'm really excited.
You mean they're on our side now?
I think so.
We're not fighting against them anymore.
I think they've seen the value for innovation and how that can really unlock new businesses and business use cases that just weren't possible before. And it'll probably empower the next great service and the next great, trillion-dollar company, billion-dollar company, or whatever. So Perry, thank you for coming on the show. I'm going to put you've done some awesome blogs at the Extreme Networks blog. And I'm a big fan of Extreme. I love their cloud-managed Wi-Fi and switching solutions. So I'm going to link a couple of your blogs in the show notes. And so if folks want to kind of do a deeper dive in there, they can look at those. And so thanks for coming on the show. We'll have a probably have you back again once all this stuff starts rolling out and seeing where we end up with the vote. And as everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you're using Apple Podcasts, we certainly appreciate a rating. And we will be back again next time.
Thanks, Bradley.